people who live in Centennial District out in deep southeast are going to be paying for Lincoln High School. That means that people who live in deep southwest are going to be paying for Portland State, even if they have no nobody going there or anything to do with the organization. So we have this across all of our urban renewal districts. Essentially, you have people who live south and east of Sandy and south and west of I-205 paying taxes for no services at all, and a reduction of services to a certain degree because we can't put that money into police, we can't put it into fire, we can't put it into parks because it's all locked up going into specific districts.
I'm just curious, sir, that you'll get your time back, but I'm just trying to reconcile that with how we currently fund things with the general fund. Just so, for example, I live in Grant Park neighborhood. I pay taxes. Part of my taxes improves parks in Southwest. How is that different from what you've just described with urban renewal?
Well, part of your taxes pays for Laurelhurst Park. Part of your taxes pay for your fire protection, and part of your taxes pay for your police protection. Okay. All of these taxes go to somebody else's area of the city and take away the money that's available for services throughout
doesn't,
the whole city.
You'll get the additional time, sir, but doesn't that just throw us back to the question of whether, as a community, we think the investment is a priority investment, not the question of whether I immediately benefit? Because my taxes, by definition, are used to fund lots of things that I don't directly benefit from. But if I believe that an infrastructure in another part of the city should be invested in, the whole city benefits. If I think that a stronger Portland State University benefits the whole city, then the whole city benefits. So I mean, I'm just trying to understand the difference in your argument about urban renewal and the focus of taxation versus how we fund things through the general fund. And I'm not sure there's a big difference.
Well, here's the big difference is the fact that when they passed urban renewal law back in the 50s, it said it would do certain things and only certain people would pay for it. It's 180 degrees reversed in what it actually said it would do right now in terms of how the funding is taking place and
so
how
I would,
it's paid.
So I would argue that what we focus our investments on in any new urban renewal district really matter. There has to be a citywide benefit. And so focusing on a part of the city that already has significant investment in transit, so that's even apart from the educational work, but significant investment in transit, an aging population that's going to depend on that transit more and more to get around, to me, that is why I've moved this forward. And the benefits of Portland State University is more even than citywide. It's like even region and statewide.
Okay.
So I think it actually addresses the specifics of this proposal, I would argue, actually addresses the evolving financial realities that you summarized. Your rebuttal.
Actually, what you're asking the City of Portland taxpayers to do is to do, I keep hearing everybody talk about the regional university, and we're being asked to pay for the regional university, which is actually a state university. We're being asked to cover that as City of Portland taxpayers.
Yeah, but our...
Wait a minute.
You've made that point already.
I did, but no. You kept saying regional. You all said regional several times. And we're being asked all to pay for Lincoln High School. I'm with PPS. They want me to pay for it, send a bond measure to me. But they're asking people whose kids don't even go to Portland Public Schools to help pay for that schools. And the county is asking City of Portland taxpayers to pay for a building without the other 20% of the county that doesn't.
Mayor, I don't think we have enough time to, I think in fairness, this gentleman's raising, they're raising policy questions, equity questions, how we spend. In a democracy, we debate these questions. And you've put on the record, I think, some interesting points. There are actually some points I'm going to talk to staff about.
We'll have him.
I'm not sure we're going to resolve it today, but I appreciate it.
Well, we'll have him come up and discuss some of these issues because this isn't the first, second,
point.
Or third time. I got to move on. It's getting late in the afternoon.
All right, Sam. Thank you.
All right.
But we don't vote until next week, so you're welcome to send in more written.
So if I could have is that everyone on the list?
Three more?
Okay.
Yeah, the last three who signed up are Brad.
We have another item after this, folks.
Brad Perkins, Mary Ann Schwab, and Tony Lineweber. Unless Nancy Newell has returned.
All right, have a seat. Welcome back. Glad you're here. Mr. Perkins, you want to go?
Yeah. Brad Perkins. I'm running for the Metro position, District 5, which does deal with the region. Also, I do sit on the Oregon Convention Center URAC Okay. I'm not going to come here and lambast the Portland State University. I mean, it's a great institution, and I think wherever they can leverage the dollars, it's important. Okay. I'm here mainly to discuss with you the process in which we got to this point. First of all, the question of blight. Where is it? Okay. I go back many years in when the urban renewal districts were first formed in this area, and I had never imagined that an institution like Portland State in downtown in this year, 2012, would be considered a blighted area, especially with all the transit systems that are here now. So what is that? What is that? Where do we go from here? I think that the urban renewal districts are a very important economic tool to advance development in the Portland region. I don't want to lose that, okay? And I fear that this may be a case where we will, because people will get upset by the way in which we are twisting the idea of blight and the need for urban renewal in this area. The point is that I haven't been proven yet that there is a real need here to have the leveraging. Let's go across the river, a whole different dimension over there on the east side. Somebody mentioned Hollywood in more need. How about Sullivan's Gulch Trail? That would be a great asset to signify that area as an urban renewal district. And take a strong look again, not just at the Coliseum this time, but the Rose Corridor as to how it can be a major transportation tourism network that would tie in the Sullivan's Gulch Trail, the North Willamette Greenway Trail, tie in high-speed rail from Vancouver to the Rose Corridor, really build these systems, and really have housing that's connected to these systems that work, that can be affordable housing, that can be market-rate housing. Then you wouldn't have to have the subsidization of a hotel down at the Oregon Convention Center. I can't even use or suggest now using planning money for the next phase of Sullivan's Gulch Trail, because now they're saying that, oh, by the way, we have changed the policies as how we use urban renewal money, and it's going to go towards businesses that want to improve their business or improve the number of employees. So as far as transportation systems and the planning of such is off the map, is off the ability to use that.
So, Mr. Perkins, your time's up. I just wanted to make sure I understood you correctly, because it's been a long day. Are you saying that an investment in the Sullivan's Gulch Trail is more important than an investment in PSU?
I think they both weigh very heavily.
Just you're going to have to answer these questions. Okay. Is that a yes or a no? Which one is more important?
I think the Sullivan's Gulch Trail and the networks that will create with a new access for development.
No, you made your case. I just want to make sure that that's what I understand.
In fairness, since you and I set up the Sullivan's Gulch planning process, and it's a joint process of PBOT and Parks, and since we also funded it, since we also invited Brad to be on the board, I think it's also fair to say, since you said it on the record, that the reason there's going to be a pause in our development has nothing to do with urban renewal and has everything to do with a railroad that we are trying to get to be a player to allow us to do this. And the railroad issue, as you know, is as thorny as the funding issue. We share the vision, and that's why we invited you to be part of the planning process. But I think it's a bait and switch to say it's more about economic, about urban renewal than about the railroad. Until we have issues of rights of way and use agreements with a railroad, there's not a heck of a lot we can do in Sullivan's Gulch except do the planning process, which we've actually made some progress on. So,
Ms. Schwab, welcome back.
I want to respond to what Mr. No. Commissioner Fisher.
Ms. Schwab, it's your turn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Long day for everyone. Mayor and Commissioner Fritz and Fish, I've had a little story of my own with the railroad. You know, your 82nd underpass, a TriMet, the beautiful Street of Roses. Several years ago, it was like riding a train without a caboose. We did get the railroad, and we were actually successful in putting metal and wrought iron fences at the vacant tunnel. Some pretty horrible things were happening in that tunnel. It's located not far from Madison High School, and at the time, I was a secretary out in that area. So finding anyone to answer a telephone call or any human being with a railroad, I congratulate you.
Mary Ann Schwab, were you voted Volunteer of the Year 2 years ago in Multnomah County?
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Number 14. They don't advertise that, and I don't either. Anyway, can I let this clock start as wearing? I have several hats today. My first one is Southeast Uplift. Dear Mayor Adams, the Southeast Uplift Board of Directors voted last night, which was Monday this week, to request the timeline for a decision on the PSU urban renewal area be extended for 90 days. This extension will allow all interested parties to have adequate time to fully informed of this project while also demonstrating the city's commitment to a high standard of the public involvement processes. Thank you, signed by Jeff Willis, and I was there. It was a unanimous vote. So please, if we could just table this, a lot of the answers being brought forward that are, quote, in the record can really be addressed. And we're hoping that you will seriously table this for 90 days. How hard can that be? It's not that the dollars are going to be right here day after tomorrow. It's not that we're giving birth to quadruplets, or are we? Let's put this on hold. That's what we're asking. Thank you.
Now I'll Thank you, Ms. Schwab.
Is that that's, it? No, that's has, Southeast Uplift.
She has another hat.
Not my other hat. I'm also a member of the League of Women Voters, who served on their committee well over 2 years for education equity studies, so I do have a little background on this. We studied 3 of the 6 Portland school districts, and I'm glad, Mayor Adams, that you've discovered that again with your $7.5 million going out, some to Portland schools and by population to the others. I applaud you for that. And also Karen Gray, superintendent of Park Rose. I kind of think she had something to do with that, too. I'm not speaking for the league now. I'm speaking for myself.
What was that? We've always given it that way.
That's good. That's good. I'm saying thank you. Okay.
It doesn't mean that Karen isn't a terrific advocate.
She is. She was on the coast, but she's a great advocate. We've always distributed ADMW.
There's iPods everywhere. Okay. Southeast Uplift Board of Directors voted to write a letter to the City Council requesting a friendly 90-day delay in voting for the new PDC-ED-URAC. They felt the public involvement principles were compromised when scheduling 3 key stakeholder meetings within 30 calendar days. April 10th, Porting Planning and Sustainability Commission. April 17th, the PDC-URA Open House at Portland State Campus. April 26th, Multnomah County approval of the Intergovernmental Agency Agreement with the Portland Development Commission, Multnomah County, and Portland State University, which brings me here to meeting number 4 for public comment. Like the Sewell Board of Directors, I'm asking you to the table of the 496 for the friendly 90 degrees, thereby respecting the PIAC principles and guidelines for transparency to allow the 7 coalitions to review the materials, starting with the income guidelines. Everyone talked about it here a minute ago. A family of 4, it's $73,000. What is affordable housing? What is low-income housing? What is four-quarter housing? What is market rate?
I need you to wrap up.
Okay. I will throw out these figures to you that what it's really going to cost people. We said 28 years now. Today I've learned a tale of 7 to 9 years. The bond insurance company cost for this is $7,700,000. The housing set aside is $46,500,000. PDC direct staffing and overhead, $24,500,000.
So we've had those numbers by other testifiers, and they were alluded to by staff presentations. I really do need to get us back to...
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Schwab. Thank you, Mr. Perkins. So we have staff come back up. So I noted some questions that I want to go through, and then I'll ask council.
I'm staff on this
case. Well, staff and partners. So I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but the last time I looked, the city of Portland was a net exporter of property taxes to the rest of the state for a variety of things. We are a net exporter of corporate and individual income taxes, lottery funds, vehicle-related fees and taxes. In other words, we pay more than we get back in terms of state spending. That's the last time I checked. The numbers might have gone up and down. Maybe there's been a big change, but that's the last I've checked. So as it relates back to schools, we heard from David Williams, and I just wanted to double check, that the net impact on Portland Public Schools is 0, Is that correct?
It flows indirectly. Well, let me bring up Morgan Masterman. Morgan, why don't you come up since we have extra chairs.
Morgan, would you introduce yourself?
Morgan Masterman, Policy Coordinator at PDC.
Hi.
The net zero impact to Portland Public Schools is based on the functionality of this type of urban renewal district, which doesn't impact the local option levy. As Dave said before, it only takes from the permanent rate.
So it's new. It's post-reforms that Chair Kogan mentioned, and so it doesn't have the impacts that other districts have. Because the other districts do not have local option levies, David Douglas, Parkrose, Reynolds are not impacted as well, is my understanding. Is that yours?
That's correct.
Okay.
Except to the extent that we're not sending that money to the state, so the state has less to divvy out.
But let's be clear.
Is that correct?
No.
Let's be clear,
Commissioner. We are subsidizing schools across the state already. If we earn just a tiny bit back with this decision, bully on us. All right, the next question I heard was that concerned that we are the whole issue of, I just wanted to air out, is there anything else in terms of the requirements on affordable housing? Those are the standard requirements. There's nothing different in the creation of this district that Commissioner Fish didn't improve upon earlier, 16, 18 months ago?
The set aside applies.
I'll walk you through two or three questions just so that it's clear on the record because it has been raised. The 30% set aside for affordable housing that was adopted by this council 5 or 6 years ago and reaffirmed last year applies to this district.
Yes.
And that there are very specific criteria which the city has adopted with respect to the 30% set aside.
Yes. Yes.
And I believe the only missing piece is that based on some requests that we've received, if this district is adopted, the Housing Bureau in the fall will have some public process to determine, to get some public feedback on income guidelines and the kind of housing people would like to see. We have some flexibility between home ownership within certain range, housing for older adults, family friendly, whatever. So we'll be seeking some input, looking specifically at the needs of the district and the opportunities in the district, and then get some public feedback.
I'd imagine the whole range of PHP programs that are funded by the TIF would be on the table to be considered by your staff. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The testimony that Dr. Fruits from the Cascade Policy Institute said that 19% is going to slush funds. That includes targeted industry recruitment and expansion. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to that characterization of business assistance. A lot of small business startup assistance is slush funds. Why is this consistent with their economic development strategy? Why is this worthwhile?
Yes, this is exactly how we spend the tax increment funded dollars with regard to economic development. So they fund small business loans. They fund larger business loans in the event that we have a larger business recruitment or retention. It funds investments in facilities that are used by businesses. And just to give an example, and it relates to another question, the wet lab space that Design Medics uses is in the Portland State Business Accelerator was funded by $1.5 million from the North McAdam URA. So it truly is an example of how we could spend tax increment dollars from this urban renewal area in a facility to build out the kind of space that we just heard today is desperately needed for companies that are coming out of both OHSU and PSU. So those different categories of dollars really, I mean, those are the kind of programs that we're talking about that we would fund, and it is consistent with programs and loans and other initiatives that we funded with TIF.
So I have a question about that. We heard that the facilities in South Waterfront are too expensive for startups to rent. Wouldn't these new facilities also, being new buildings, be more expensive to rent?
No, I mean, the wet lab space in the business accelerator is priced at a rate that startups can afford. It's subsidized space. So we've used tax increment dollars to subsidize wet lab space. The wet lab space is not meant to be permanent space. It's meant to be temporary space that these companies can use at the kind of when they're in that testing phase and they need private lab space outside of the university setting. And And so our goal, both in this URA, this new one, but also continues in North McAdam, is to continue to figure out ways to put dollars to work in that way. The Business Accelerator is the only opportunity we've had so far, but the Collaborative Life Sciences Building, we continue to talk with OHSU and the other OUS partners about whether or not there will be an opportunity for us to put dollars to work in that building to lower the cost of that kind of space for life sciences-based companies.
Commissioner,
does that answer?
Yes. Yeah. Is there a budget for that in this URA?
That's this.
That's in. I'm going to pull up the really small print chart here. If you look in the research and technology commercialization section, it has, in the entrepreneurship section, it has research facility expansion and then startup accelerator lab space. That's in this chart here.
Okay, thank you.
I think I'm getting to the age where I can't read it without glasses. So, but if you look across those line items, those are the proposed expenditures for that category.
Commissioner Fish.
First to President Vivel. At the last hearing we had, Commissioner Kogan made a request that you change your motto. Have you made any progress towards that?
He suggested we change it from "Let knowledge serve the city" to "Let knowledge serve the county." I think we've always taken the word "city" to mean, in general, the region and the urbanized area, and I think he's probably okay with that.
Patrick, the number of people who testified talked about the question of blight and could we establish blight. And my recollection is that the last time the city had a fight over that issue, it related to the expansion of the River District, and there was a legal challenge brought that was ultimately went to LUBA, mm-hmm. the Land Use Board of Appeals, and that was litigated and then came back, and we got some guidance. And I think, since I believe that's the most recent experience we've had with the statutory meaning of blight as interpreted by LUBA, could you just give us a quick primer on what we learned from that proceeding and how it impacts your thinking as to whether there's sufficient blight in this district?
Yeah, so I'm going to turn it over to Lisa Gramp, who's an attorney with PDC, who has looked into this issue and can respond directly to your question.
Hi. Lisa Gramp, Assistant General Counsel at PDC. So in connection with the opinion that we got from the LUBA appeal, there were several things that came out of that opinion. Relevant for this district, though, is the concept that in establishing your blight finding, when you find blight in a district, what you're looking for is that not every parcel in the district need be blighted, that it's the district as a whole that's blighted. So when Patrick had the map that showed the different indices of blight, we conclude, based on those three indices that he identified, that as a whole, we feel comfortable that you can make that finding that the area is, in fact, blighted. There was testimony about...
So if I could just summarize, it's the underlying law has been clarified by a variety of court actions over the years, and we now have a much more objective way, as we saw illustrated in the map, a much more objective way on a proposed boundary-wide basis than we've had in the past.
Well, I think the outcome of the LUBA opinion in the River District really is that the nugget we got from that is that it's the area as a whole and that not every parcel in a district needs to be blighted.
So I remember that part of the debate, and the testimony was, you know, what percentage of a district must be blighted to qualify in this LUBA decision. So that decision, in part, has guided the opinion that Patrick gave us that this would qualify, that the blight component would be met in this new proposed district, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
And I think what we should, I would like to suggest that we, to the extent we have some relevant materials that anyone in the public wants to review on this question that's in the public domain, we should just link it to the website so it's available. That's an important document. I had one more question, if I could. We had a couple of people raise a question about the amount of funds set aside for overhead.
Yep.
Now, I want to give you a chance to respond to that first, and then I have a follow-up question. So some people testified they thought it was on the high end for a district of this size and duration. What's your response?
So it's, you know, the number is $24.5 million over 28 years. It's an annual average of about $875,000. That's the cost of PDC operating this urban renewal area. And You know, people can have their own opinion about what's the right number. It represents just under 15% of the total dollar amount. It's consistent with our historical operating percentage. And you know, I think we pay attention to this a lot. And I certainly would invite people to look at other public agencies that do similar work, and you should be happy to compare that number. But I just want to split out that there is just under half of that is truly direct project-related costs. So if projects don't happen in a certain time frame, we don't get the money, we don't spend the money. So there is, you know, there's the allocation of rent and those kind of things, and permanent staff, the folks who you know, do payroll and those kind of things, which don't go away. We allocate that cost, but a big chunk of this is project-related costs. So if the projects happen, these dollars come out of that. If they don't happen, we don't get the dollars.
You said half of it was project-related, so the other half?
I'm sorry, it's half of the staff cost, about a third of the total cost. About $8 million is direct project staff cost. So if the projects don't happen, the money doesn't flow to us.
Okay. And when you say it's consistent with our historical averages, you're talking about in the aggregate, or is that a district-by-district average?
In the aggregate. It's hard to say what the ideal percentage should be for an urban renewal area. Each urban renewal areas don't spend money flat in a flat way. They spend money in lumps, and so you could have a lot of activity in a particular district. A lot of it could be staff intensive, and then a few years go by and you don't have a lot of activity. So there's no way that we look at it, you know, in the aggregate, and depending on how much gets spent in a given year, that moves up or down. So it's in that 11 to 15% range.
And the City Council and the Portland Development Commission have to approve your assumed administrative costs on a year-by-year basis for this district and every other district.
Right.
Two more questions, and then I'll shut up. This is my last chance. One for you, Dr. Revell, but one more for Patrick. We had testimony from the laborers representative about expressing a desire to see some dollars set aside for infrastructure, roads, parks, and other things. And historically, we have negotiated dollars for that purpose. This district does include a significant portion of the South Park blocks, for example, which goes through the heart of PSU and benefits not only the campus but the broader community. And I just want to confirm the exchange that we had earlier that the decisions about whether there'd be specific money set aside in the future for a parks infrastructure plan is for a future PDC and council to decide. Is that correct?
Yes, it's certainly an eligible use of dollars. I think we have a very contrary to what's been testified here. We do have a very tightly focused plan, and so I think any investment we make in whatever, whether it be infrastructure, parks, or buildings, should promote the mission of the district. But I do think there's parks and other infrastructure investments that could meet that definition. You know, it could be the public piece that attracts private investment in an adjacent facility that promotes the PSU's research agenda, which we hear sometimes. We don't need you to do the building. We need the sidewalk done, or we need this park done, and that's going to attract our private investment in a building.
So thank you. And Dr. Vivell, perhaps the last word, at least from me, to you, sir. We've had some lively debates in my 4 years here about what's an appropriate purpose for an urban renewal district. We've had very lively discussions up here about, for example, whether we should use urban renewal money in Lentz to build a minor league baseball stadium. I disagreed with that. Others agreed with it. About whether we should use it to renovate Memorial Coliseum. I have agreed with that. Others have disagreed with it. About light rail and a host of other expenses. So some people who have testified today have questioned whether an investment in Portland State is core to what we're trying to accomplish here on our economic development agenda and in terms of benefit to the city. Last word to you.
Well, it won't surprise you to hear that I think it's an absolutely central way of using funds like this. And there are two key reasons. One is that universities increasingly, and Portland State has always been an example of that, see themselves as local anchors, anchors critical to the economic well-being of the region. And that's why we look to do partnerships. So most of our buildings already that we've done in the last 10 years are partnership buildings, where there is private sector uses in the building. This will continue. The opportunities for whether it's a business accelerator, a joint venture with a research company, whatever may the kind of activities, private activities that are taxpayers that we can stimulate with this jointly with the university. That's critical to our role, critical how we envision ourselves. And again, I want to repeat what Patrick said earlier. If when we do a building that has any kind of a private sector use in it, then taxes are paid on the proportion of that building that is private sector use. So just because it is owned by the university doesn't exempt it from property taxes. And again, the second one is that probably it's true that the biggest increment that a district like this helps generate is the educational increment, the educational benefit that is created in the region that actually takes place everywhere in the region, not just in the Urban Renewal District, not even just in the city of Portland, but it benefits the whole region because having a more educated population will increase the economic vitality of this region, which will increase income inflow, taxes for all the taxing bodies in ways that are not very easy to measure. But Joe Cordray, a local consultant here, has done the analysis of that if you just increase the percentage of people with a bachelor's degree by 1%, you will increase the gross product of Portland by $1.4 billion. All right, that's 1%, $1.4 billion. And probably somebody in the city can figure out how much an increase of the gross domestic product of Portland by $1.4 billion, how much that means in terms of taxes in all the ways that the mayor earlier mentioned.
Thank you, sir.
Commissioner?
Thank you. What percentage of the planned building for Portland State University comes from the URA versus elsewhere?
Of the, well, it depends on what building you look at. For instance, the one where the amount is specified, the business school building, I think it suggests, if I remember, $2 million from the urban renewal.
Yeah.
That is a $50 million building.
So would you not be able to do it
without this? So that's 4%.
Yeah, would you not be able to do it without the urban renewal district?
We just did the Oregon University system, just put together the rankings for its capital request. And this was an absolutely critical piece because you get points for different things. Having this in there, and it's tentative, obviously, subject to your approval, is a critical piece in giving it the points to show that the other matching money is in place. It would lose significant points without looking at all the other projects. I don't know whether it will drop below the line or not. But, yes, this is the kind of critical money that helps projects happen.
Okay, thank you. And please answer my question from earlier, which you didn't. It's not that you didn't answer it. You weren't given an opportunity. Why, if we have $50 million to invest in Portland State University, why would we not invest in faculty salaries, in scholarships for students, and in those ongoing needs that help students and faculty make it at Portland State University?
Well, if somebody is willing to write another $50 million check, I would be happily. You know, I mean, as you know, all, and I'm not being facetious, but as you well know, all funds come with strings attached. They're unfortunately not endlessly co-mingleable. This one is an opportunity to build the buildings. You cannot educate people without the buildings. Obviously, we're looking, and some of the infrastructure things, we're looking at other venues and other sources for the money to provide scholarships, to hire the faculty, and so on. One important thing is that Portland State is already has the least square footage per student of any university in the Oregon system and less than any of our peer institutions. So we already have too little space to actually do the job that we want to do for our current student body. But as I said, we expect to grow to at least 36,000 in just the next 7 to 10 years. Those, we will need money, of course, to educate those students. Some of that will come from tuition. Some of that will hopefully come from the state as we move forward. We're moving into a slightly different economy, and as you know, we continue to work hard on increasing the state funding. Some of it will come from philanthropy, which we're spending a lot of time increasing the amount of money that comes from philanthropy. So we will work on all fronts. This is by no means the only resource that we're looking at.
Thank you. I'll just state for the record that I'm really concerned that we focus on buildings before we focus on the people to teach and the students.
Well, may I that is not a correct statement because I've been, for the last 4 years, I've been working on the operational funding and on the philanthropy that pays for the salaries and that brings in the scholarships. Today, I happen to be talking about the other thing.
I meant we in terms of the general community and in terms of state funding, which as Commissioner Leonard aptly referred to, that our state does not fund education adequately.
And I would love to come back to the city council to talk about funding for scholarships and for faculty salaries.
Well, I mean, somebody testified that this, in fact, is a long-term earmark to support PSU. So the I associate myself with the remarks of Steve Novick. If the council wants to support PSU, I think we should be having that discussion as to what's the best way to do that. I'm hearing from you that you think this is the best way to do that.
This is the only option that's on the table. Nobody offered to just write a $50 million check.
I have a couple other questions for PDC. The charts in Exhibit B, pages 18 and 19, seem to show that the foregone revenues have a present value of about $62 million, while the revenues gained to the tax rolls in 2046 are $1.6 million. Is that correct, that we only gain $1.6 million in tax revenue? It's Exhibit B, page 19, table 11. Maybe that's something you can get back to me before next week if you're not.
Table 11 is the amount in the year after the bonds are paid off that the city would receive and the taxing jurisdictions would receive in taxes.
And it would be 1.6
for that 1 year.
That's a 1 year. So that's when it's back on the rolls, that's what you would begin to expect to collect annually.
Okay.
So I apologize, I need to make a programming note because Commissioner Fish had to go to an appointment. Our work here will continue. And I will submit it for the record when we take this up again. We are recording this. Take this up again next week. We're not voting on this issue
right,
today.
Right.